This is the Magic Word Podcast.com.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! Hi, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. Well, since I've grown my beard here, I've had several people saying, you know, you should be doing Santa Claus during Christmas holidays. And I said, well, yeah, I know I've been gaining a little bit of weight. Yeah, if you follow me on Facebook, then you probably see a lot of my posts for food. And yeah, I do like to eat, that's for sure. But I agree, I probably do need to, for sure, lose a little bit of weight. But the holidays is not the time for losing weight. It seems to be the time for gaining weight. I mean, that's when eggnog is available, you know, and all the cookies and cakes and festive times when people are going to be eating together and sharing their food and family and time and fun and entertainment. It's a time in which a lot of us are performing for others also, and they are having just a great time with the magic that we are performing, doing close-up or stage or whatever types of shows that you may be doing. I hope that you're doing well. It is a time, certainly in the holidays, that is celebrated around the world. Unlike some holidays that are unique to certain countries, the Christmas holidays and Hanukkah is something that is celebrated regardless of where you are located around the world. And to everyone, then, we wish you all a very happy holiday and a festive new year as well, most prosperous and healthy new year. The holidays is also a time for giving and for receiving. And during this past year, I have been giving you guys a lot of material and a lot of product. I've just going back and looking, and I have had, this will be the 64th podcast for the year 2016. And we still have a couple more to go before the end of the year. And if you look at each one of those being an hour, which really most of them are over an hour, that it's well into like three whole days and nights of listening just from this one year alone. And that's just from what you get to hear on the air. Obviously, that what goes into all this as far as the time taken to record all these, then go back and listen to them, and then to edit them, put them together, and post them, and do the marketing and promotion to make sure that everybody knows they're available, does take a little bit of time, more than just a little bit of time. So I would probably say about three times that amount of time for each podcast. So for every hour, there's probably about another 3 hours that goes into all this. So a lot of time and effort that's gone into this, and this has been my gift to you. I hope that you guys have been enjoying this. And also, as far as receiving, I have received a lot of wonderful comments. I get nice suggestions from listeners who suggest different people that I could have as guests on the program. And I take those to heart. And I contact a lot of these people. And I think I fulfilled about everyone who has made those requests, fulfilled the requests. And also, I do want to thank all those people who are the friends of the Magic Word. You know, it's that time of the year, of course, when people are going to be making their donations or gifts to different people, and this is not a tax deduction by any means. It's just something that if you happen to enjoy, that you can donate. And I do want to thank all those who are friends of the Magic Word who have donated on a one-time basis, and particularly those who have gone on and have pledged financial support on an ongoing monthly basis through Patreon.com. So I want to thank all of you guys who have made pledges, or those who have thought about making pledges. Here it is towards the end of the year, the gift-giving time. What better time? If you want to give yourself a gift, give yourself the gift of more audio, more podcasts, and some more material, which I promise to give you into this next year then as well. So, and if not, then God bless you, and thank you very much for listening, and I appreciate each and every one of you in your own way. So thank you, and thank you. And as a way of thanking you, I have a very special treat, and I say very special treat this week because I have been working on this particular podcast all year long. I really want to thank all of the guys who have helped to make this podcast. As I've gone to different magic conventions, I have taken some time and chatted with each of these guys on the podcast for longer interviews and chats. However, that then I'll say, you know, if you got just a couple minutes, that I want you also then to read this line. And so I've had different people read the parts for different characters in this coming story that you're going to be hearing here in just a few moments. So all of these guys have, and gals, have actually recorded a little bit, and then I have put them together. And this, you talk about a labor of love, and I said some of the others have taken maybe 3 hours for every 1 hour that's on the podcast. This particular one, I would say, is closer to more like 30 hours of time that it has taken me to get all of these guys and gals together to record these bits and pieces, and then to put them together, overlay the sound effects, which is another thing to have to pay for. That, again, some of the costs of producing these podcasts is having to pay some royalties. And so different things like that that have been paid. So anyhow, the point being is that this has taken a long time, and it's my gift to you. And it's something that I hope that you enjoy. In the past, I have presented A Night Before Christmas in a similar vein, in which we've had several magicians who have lent their voices. And then we did The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, featuring Eugene Berger as the Grinch. And I've had several voices. And so this week we're going to be presenting A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens that is going to be read by several magicians whose voices you might recognize. Now, several of you are listening to this through iTunes or other podcatchers or different ways that you get your RSS feed, but you never go to the website. And so in this particular case, I would recommend if you would go to themagicwordpodcast.com and look for this episode, because you will see photos of the magicians there and who played who. So if you're saying, that voice sounds familiar, or I don't know who that is, or that kind of sounds like so-and-so, you can go to the podcast website and you can see their pictures and figure out who it is that you have just heard. But before we begin this tale, I thought you might like to know a little bit more about Charles Dickens. Yeah, I know that everyone knows he was a British writer and is popular, of course, for novels like The Old Curiosity Shop, Nicholas Nickleby, Hard Times, and, of course, The Christmas Carol. And I don't know how many of you actually know that he performed as a magician. Yeah, that's right. He performed on stage in 1849 as a magician, and he went by the name of Rhea Rama Roos. And he gave this performance in a little coastal resort on the island of Wight off the southern coast of England. And he billed himself as the unparalleled necromancer. And apparently he did several things, including making playing cards magically burst into flames, or transporting a woman's watch from inside a wooden box and into the middle of a loaf of bread, and even cooking a steaming hot plum pudding in a gentleman's top hat. Lots of interesting things by today's standards, certainly, and this was back in 1849, well after he had already produced and written the books for which he had become famous. And need I point out also that even the most popular magician of our age and the most wealthy magician, as listed by Forbes magazine, was David Copperfield. Yes, that David Copperfield, of course, was written by Charles Dickens. And David Kotkin from New York City, as a young magician, had taken his pseudonym from David Copperfield, as written by Charles Dickens. So there's an interesting tie there to Mr. Dickens. And so it is with that little bit of background that we go into the podcast that I present to you today. And again, I want to thank all of our guests. And now, if you just want to pause for a moment, you can go get some steaming cup of hot chocolate and sit by the fire and have the kids come around too, because this is a great story and something I think that can become a family tradition, just to listen to A Magical Christmas Carol here on The Magic Word. This is an abridged Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, a ghost story of Christmas, as narrated by Scott Wells and voiced by various magicians whom you may recognize. Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change, for he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Mind, I don't mean to say that I know, of my own knowledge, what there is particularly dead about a doornail. I might have been inclined myself to regard a coffin nail as the deadest piece of ironmongery in the trade, but the wisdom of our ancestors is in the simile, and my unhallowed hands shall not disturb it, or the country's done for. You will therefore permit me to repeat, emphatically, that Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole assign, his sole residentiary legatee, his sole friend and sole mourner. And even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event, but that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of the funeral. He solemnized it with an undoubted bargain. The mention of Marley's funeral brings me back to the point I started from. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate. If we were not perfectly convinced that Hamlet's father died before the play began, there would be nothing more remarkable in his taking a stroll at night in an easterly wind upon his own ramparts than there would be in any other middle-aged gentleman rashly turning out after dark in a breezy spot, say, St. Paul's Churchyard, for instance, literally to astonish his son's weak mind. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood, years afterwards, above the warehouse door. Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone. Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained, and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. A frosty rime was on his head, and on his eyebrows, and his wiry chin. He carried his open, low temperature always about him. He iced his coffee in the dog days and didn't thaw it out 1 degree at Christmas. External heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge. No warmth could warm, no wintry weather chill him. No wind that blew was bitterer than he. No falling snow was more intent upon his purpose. No pelting rain less open to entreaty. Foul weather didn't know where to have him. The heaviest rain and snow and hail and sleet could boast of the advantage over him in only one respect. They often came down handsomely, and Scrooge never did. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say, with gladsome looks, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what it was o'clock. No man or woman ever once in all his life inquired the way to such and such a place of Scrooge. Even the blind men's dogs appeared to know him, and when they saw him coming on, would tug their owners into doorways and up courts, and then would wag their tails as though they said, "No eye at all is better than an evil eye, dark master." But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked, to edge his way along the crowded paths of life. Warning all human sympathy to keep its distance was what the knowing ones call nuts to Scrooge. Once upon a time, of all the good days in a year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal, and he could hear the people in the court outside go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breasts and stamping their feet upon the pavement, stones to warm them. The city clocks had only just gone 3, but it was quite dark already. It had not been light all day, and candles were flaring in the windows of the neighboring offices like ruddy smears upon the palpable brown air. The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole, and was so dense without that, although the court was of the narrowest, the houses opposite were mere phantoms. To see the dingy cloud come drooping down, obscuring everything, one might have thought that nature lived hard by and was brewing on a large scale. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who, in a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of tank, was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so much smaller that it looked like one coal. But he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room, and so surely as the clerk came in with the shovel, the master predicted it would be necessary for them to part. Wherefore the clerk put on his white comforter and tried to warm himself at the candle, in which comfort, not being a man of strong imagination, he failed.
"A Merry Christmas, Uncle!"
It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew.
"Pah! Humbug!"
Christmas? A humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do? Out upon Merry Christmas. If I had my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding. He should.
Uncle.
Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you. Much good has it ever done you.
I have always thought of Christmas time as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good, and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
Good afternoon.
I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. So a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
His nephew left the room without an angry word. But the clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in.
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute, who suffer greatly at the present time.
A few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund, to buy the poor some meat and drink, and means of warmth. What shall we put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the prisons and the workhouses. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there.
And many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it.
The hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern and went home to bed. Now it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door of his house, except that it was very large. And yet Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face, with a dismal light about it, like a bad lobster in a dark cellar. As Scrooge looked at this, it was a knocker again. He said,
"Pooh, pooh!"
and closed the door with a bang. The sound resounded through the house like thunder. Every room above and every cask in the wine merchant's cellar below appeared to have a separate peal of echoes of its own. Scrooge was not a man to be frightened by echoes. He fastened the door and walked across the hall and up the stairs. Up Scrooge went, not carrying a button for its being very dark. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in. Double-locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus, secured against his surprise, he put on his dressing-gown and slippers and his nightcap and sat down before the very low fire to take his gruel. As he threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened upon a bell, a disused bell that hung in the room. It was with great astonishment and with a strange dread that, as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. Soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. This was succeeded by a clanking noise, deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door. It came on through the heavy door, and a specter passed into the room before his eyes. And upon its coming in, the dying flame leaped up as though it cried,
"I know him! Marley's ghost!"
"What do you want with me?"
"Much."
"Who are you?"
"Ask me who I was."
"Who were you then?"
"In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley."
The ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace, as if he were quite used to it.
"You don't believe in me."
"I don't."
"Why do you doubt your senses?"
"Because a little thing affects them. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are."
The spirit raised a frightful cry.
"Mercy, dreadful apparition! Why do you trouble me? Why do spirits walk the earth? And why do they come to me?"
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me in life. My spirit never rode beyond our money-changing hole, and weary journeys lie before me.
Scrooge was very much dismayed to hear the specter going on at this rate, and began to quake exceedingly.
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. You will be haunted by three spirits. Expect the first tomorrow night when the bell tolls one. Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night. When the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate, look to see me no more.
Scrooge tried to say humbug, but stopped at the first syllable. And being, from the emotion he had undergone, or the fatigues of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the conversation of the ghost, or the lateness of the hour, he went straight to bed, without undressing, and fell asleep on the instant. When Scrooge awoke, the clock in his room tolled a deep, dull, hollow, melancholy one. Light flashed up in the room upon the instant, and the curtains of his bed were drawn aside by a strange figure, like a child.
Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood in the busy thoroughfares of a city. It was made plain enough by the dressing of the shops that here, too, it was Christmas time. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
Knew it? I apprenticed here!
They went in. At the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig, sitting behind such a high desk that, if it had been 2 inches taller, he must have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement,
"Why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart! It's Fezziwig! Alive again!"
"Yo-ho there! Ebenezer! Dick!"
A living and moving picture of Scrooge's former self, a young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow apprentice.
"Yo-ho, my boys!"
said Fezziwig.
"No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick! Christmas, Ebenezer! Let's have the shutters up before a man can say Jack Robinson. Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here."
Clear away? There was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away, or couldn't have cleared away, with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. The warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with a music book, and went up to the lofty desk and made an orchestra of it, and tuned like 50 stomach aches. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast smile. In came the three Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In they all came, one after another, some shyly, some boldly, some gracefully, some awkwardly, some pushing, some pulling. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. Away they all went. 20 couple at once, hands half round and back again the other way, down the middle and up again, round and round, old top couple always turning up in the wrong place. When the clock struck 11, this ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig, shaking hands with every person as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas.
"A small matter,"
said the ghost,
"to make these silly folks so full of gratitude. He has spent but a few pounds of your money, 3 or 4 perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise?
It isn't that, Spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things impossible to add and count them up, what then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost us a fortune. Spirit, remove me from this place. Haunt me no longer.
As he struggled with the spirit, he was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and, further, of being in his own bedroom. He had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep. Scrooge awoke in his bedroom. The walls and ceiling were so hung with living green that it looked a perfect grove. The leaves of holly, mistletoe, and ivy reflected back the light, and such a mighty blaze went roaring up the chimney. Heaped upon the floor to form a kind of throne were turkeys, geese, great joints of meat, pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red-hot chestnuts, cherry-cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious pears, great bowls of punch, and immense 12 cakes. Upon this couch there sat a giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch.
Come in, and know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me. You've never seen the like of me before. Touch my robe.
Scrooge did as he was told and held it fast. The room and its contents all vanished instantly, and they stood in the city streets upon a snowy Christmas morning. Scrooge and the ghost passed on, invisible, straight to Scrooge's clerks, and on the threshold of the door the spirit smiled and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling with the sprinklings of his torch. Then up rose Mrs. Cratchit.
What has ever got your precious father, then? And your brother, Tiny Tim?
No, there's father coming,
cried the two young Cratchits, who were everywhere at once. In came Bob, the father, his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look reasonable, and Tiny Tim on his shoulder. Alas, for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch, and had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
And how did little Tim behave?
As good as gold and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much and thinks the strangest things you've ever heard. He told me coming home that he hoped the people saw him in church because he was a cripple and it might be pleasant for them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
Master Peter and the two young Cratchits went to fetch the goose, with which they soon returned in high procession. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy, ready beforehand in a little saucepan, hissing hot. Master Peter mashed the potatoes with incredible vigor. Miss Belinda sweetened up the applesauce. Martha dusted the hot plates. Bob took Tiny Tim beside him in a tiny corner at the table. The two young Cratchits set chairs for everybody, not forgetting themselves, and crammed spoons into their mouths, lest they should shriek for goose before their turn came to be helped. At last the dishes were set on, and grace was said. It was succeeded by a breathless pause, as Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly all along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it in the breast. But when she did, and when the long-expected gush of stuffing issued forth, one murmur of delight rose round the board.
Ah!
and even Tiny Tim, excited by the two young Cratchits, beat on the table with the handle of his knife and feebly cried,
"Hooray!"
But now, the plates being changed by Miss Belinda, Mrs. Cratchit left the room alone to take the pudding up and bring it in. Mrs. Cratchit entered, smiling proudly with the pudding, like a speckled cannonball, so hard and firm, blazing in half of a quartern of ignited brandy, and adorned with Christmas holly stuck into the top.
Oh, a wonderful pudding!
At last the dinner was all done. The cloth was cleared, the hearth swept, and the fire made up. Then all the Cratchit family drew around the hearth, while the chestnuts on the fire sputtered and crackled noisily. They were happy, grateful, pleased with one another, and contented with the time. And when they faded, and looked happier yet in the bright sprinklings of the spirit's torch in parting, Scrooge had an eye upon them, and especially on Tiny Tim, until the last. But the whole scene passed off, and he and the spirit were again upon their travels. Much they saw, and far they went, and many homes they visited, but always with a happy end. Suddenly, as they stood together in the open place, the bell struck 12. Scrooge looked around him for the ghost, and saw it no more. As the last stroke ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and, lifting up his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him.
Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I've seen. Will you not speak to me?
The apparition gave him no earthly reply. The hand was pointed straight before them.
Lead on! Lead on! The night is waning fast and it is precious time to me. I know. Lead on, spirit.
They scarcely seemed to enter the city, for the city rather seemed to spring up before them. But there they were, in the heart of it all, amongst the merchants. The spirit stopped beside one little knot of businessmen. Observing that the hand was pointed to them, Scrooge advanced to listen to their talk.
I don't know much about it either way. I only know he's dead.
When did he die?
Last night, I believe.
What has he done with his money?
I haven't heard. Company, perhaps. He hasn't left it to me, that's all I know.
The scene had changed, and now he almost touched a bare, uncurtained bed. A pale light, rising in the outer air, fell straight upon his bed, and on it, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of this unknown man.
Spirit! Let me see some tenderness connected with the death, or this dark chamber spirit will be forever present to me.
The ghost conducted him to poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated round the fire. Quiet, very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner, and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in needlework. But surely they were very quiet. The mother laid her work upon the table and put her hand up to her face.
The colour hurts my eyes. They're better now again. It makes them weak by candlelight, and I wouldn't show my weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time.
Past it, rather. But I think he has walked a little slower than he used to these few last evenings, mother.
I've known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed. But he was very light to carry, and his father loved him so that it was no trouble, no trouble. And there is your father at the door.
She hurried out to meet him, and Bob came in. His tea was ready for him, and they all tried to see who should help him to it the most. Then the two young Cratchits got up on his knee and laid, each child, a little cheek against his face, as if they said, "Don't mind it, father. Don't be grieved." Bob was very cheerful with him and spoke pleasantly to all the family. He looked at the work upon the table and praised Mrs. Cratchit and the girls.
You went today then, Robert?
Yes, my dear. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday. My little, little child. My little child.
Spectre. Something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me what man that was with the covered face, whom I saw lying dead.
The ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him to a dismal, wretched, ruinous courtyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and, following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Am I that man who lay upon the bed? No, spirit, oh, no, no. Spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Assure me that I yet may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. I will honor Christmas in my heart, and I will try to keep it all year. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone.
Holding up his hands in one last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. He was checked in his transports by the churches ringing out their lustiest peal as he had ever heard. Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist, no night. Clear, bright, stirring, golden day.
What's today?
Cried Scrooge, calling downward to a boy in Sunday clothes.
Eh?
What's today, my fine fellow?
Today? Why? Why, Christmas Day!
It's Christmas Day! I haven't missed it! Hello, my fine fellow!
Hello!
Do you know the Poulterers? In the next street but one, at the corner?
I should hope I did.
An intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold that prize turkey that was hanging there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one.
What, you mean the one as big as me?
What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes, my buck.
It's hanging there now.
Is it? Go and buy it.
Walk, huh?
No, no, I am in earnest. Go and buy it and tell them to bring it here that I may give them the direction where to take it. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown.
The boy was off like a shot.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
Scrooge dressed himself, all in his best, and at last got out into the streets. The people were by this time pouring forth, as he had seen them with the ghost of Christmas present, and, walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded everyone with a delightful smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant, in a word, that three or four good-humored fellows said,
Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Scrooge.
Yes, Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Scrooge.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas.
Happy Chanukah and Shana Tova.
And good Yom Tov to you.
He was early at the office next morning. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late. The clock struck 9. No Bob. A quarter past. No Bob. Bob was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Bob's hat was off before he opened the door. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock.
Hello? What do you mean coming here this time of day?
I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time.
You are? Yes, I think you are. Step this way, if you please. Now, I tell you what, my friend, I am not going to stand for this sort of thing any longer, and therefore, I'm about to raise your salary.
Bob trembled.
A Merry Christmas, Bob,
said Scrooge as he clapped him on the back.
A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but his own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
God bless us, everyone!
We wish you a Merry Christmas! We wish you a Merry Christmas!
So there you have it. A very abridged edition of Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol. In this case, it was a very magical Christmas Carol. At least I hope that you think of it that way. I want to thank each and every one of the people who are on this very special podcast. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your words. And so as we close out this holiday episode, I again want to thank our listeners. That is you who are listening right now. Thank you very much for tuning in and downloading and listening to these podcasts week after week. I thank you also for your suggestions. I thank you for your patronage. I just have so much to be thankful for through this podcast. I've been able to make so many more friends as a result of this and to deepen the relationships with others, which I encourage you to do this coming year as well. Go out and be kind to people. Talk with people. Find out more about people. There's more than just looking down and texting or looking at your phone, sending out emails and that kind of a thing. Instead of keeping your head down, keep your head up and look at people. Talk to people. Hear what they have to say. You might be surprised what you learn and how much better of a person that you will be because each person makes you greater. And in your own way, you are making other people greater. Not just from the magic you do, but from the words that you share. So, be nice to each other and share yourself with each other. And have a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous and healthy New Year, one and all. And again, as Tiny Tim said, God bless us, everyone.